649, 1320 WILS. Well, one of the reasons Donald Trump won states like Michigan and Ohio is because of what's happened to our to the businesses in our states. We've seen many businesses fall apart, especially smaller businesses, local businesses. Well, my next guest went to his hometown, Lancaster, Ohio, and writes about what occurred there to what was really a company that was fueling the entire town itself. He's written about it in his new book, Glass House, The 1% Economy and the Shattering of the All-American Town. Brian Alexander is with us here in WILS. Brian, great to have you here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
This is called the Anchor Hocking Glass Company. What did that mean to your hometown, that company?
Well, it employed over 5,000 people in my hometown, including all the executives, all the leadership of the company, because it was headquartered there. And it meant a lot to the entire United States. I bet if some of your listeners went into their kitchens right now, they could find a glass measuring cup or a lasagna baking dish with a little anchor on the bottom. That came from Lancaster, Ohio.
Yeah, how far back did the company go? How long was it around?
1905,
my goodness. So when you were growing up, how were things at that point?
It was a very prosperous town. In fact, in 1947, Forbes magazine devoted an entire issue to Lancaster and declared it the all-American town. That they said that this is what you get when the free enterprise system works so wonderfully. You get a town just like Lancaster, Ohio. Yeah. And that was pretty true. It was the kind of town, you know, that was full of kids on Stingray bikes, and you knew who the druggist was, that sort of thing. Yeah. It really has undergone quite a transformation, not out of something natural that happened, not a kind of evolution of industry, but because financial players began to play around with anchor hocking.
Because you talk about what you call financial engineering. When did this begin, and what did it do to the company?
It really began during the beginnings of the Reagan administration with a guy by the name of Carl Icahn, who is currently in the news as one of Donald Trump's key advisors. Carl Icahn performed what was then called a green mail operation. He bought up a bunch of stock. He said he was going to make lots of trouble for the company, but he would be happy to go away if they bought all that stock back at a premium. And so that's exactly what happened. They paid him off, and he went away. But what that did was put anchor hocking, what is known as in play, and it drew the attention of other players who went after anchor hocking, and they've really spent the last 30 years sucking the life out of the company and thereby sucking some of the life out of the town.
What did that make the company have to do, though, these engineering plots that were happening?
Well, so here's an example. There's something called a dividend recapitalization. So the financiers place a bunch of debt on the company, but then they pay themselves a big dividend. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in one case, a private equity firm had Anchor Hocking borrow $45 million, and then it paid itself, the financial engineers paid themselves $30 million of that money. But all that $45 million goes onto the books of the glass company, and as a result, it really becomes crushed by all this debt. And that has happened in Michigan, too. In fact, one of the same private equity firms used to own a company called Hess Industries in Nile, Michigan. Mm-hmm. There was another one, a foundry called Kurdzeel Industries in Rothbury, Michigan. You won't find those anymore because they were victimized just like Anchor Hocking was.
Now, Anchor Hocking, did it try to fight the takeover that occurred? Was there anything they were able to do?
Well, no. I mean, there was an initial takeover in the 1980s, and they did try to fight that, and they lost. It was a public company, and the board of directors voted to merge with a company called Newell that became Newell Rubbermaid. After that, however, it was in private hands, and there was no way for the company to fight because it was a private company. So somebody just came in and bought it. They didn't really have a lot of choice in the matter.
Brian Alexander's brand new book, Glass House, The 1% Economy and the Shattering of the All-American Town. And so you went back to Lancaster while you were writing the book. Where do you live full-time, though?
I live in San Diego, California now. I went to school out here and stayed here. Always loved the town, though, and made visits back, of course. And then in 2013, I realized that a lot of things that I saw troubling me trends in the country, a lot of those trends were running really right through the middle of Lancaster. And so
what did you find though in the city? I mean, when you go back and you're writing the book in the town of Lancaster, what was happening there?
Well, a lot of minimum wage jobs. So actually, unemployment rate is pretty low in Lancaster. It's about the national average. But the kinds of jobs that people are able to do pay basically minimum wage or slightly above. And as a result, there's a lot more poor people in Lancaster. There's also a lot more drug abuse. Just like West Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, parts of Michigan, heroin has really gripped the town. It's a public health crisis now. There's been a real erosion of what I call the social contract, the social web that kept everything operating well in Lancaster, has really eroded, as it has for hundreds of other towns. In some ways, Lancaster is better off than some other towns. Mm. A lot of the same financial engineering has really happened all across America.
Okay. And do the residents of the town, do they understand exactly what occurred and why things are the way they are now?
No, although I think more of them do since Glass House has been published. Mm-hmm. But at the time, a lot of people couldn't even name who owned Anchor Hawking anymore. I mean, Anchor Hawking still exists. And so I actually encourage people to go out and buy some glass from Anchor Hawking today.
Because you focus on the financial engineering, but we hear a lot about NAFTA, trade deals, and other policies that have been pursued by D.C. How much of that was a factor versus just the financial engineering?
Trade is it is pressure. It is a challenge for the company. But, for example, in Toledo, Ohio, there's Anchor Hawking's longtime rival, Libby Glass, still exists and is still a healthy, profitable company right now. Mm-hmm. And they face the same kinds of trade pressures as Anchor Hawking does. What happened to Anchor Hawking was not the result of trade. It was the result of this financial engineering.
Because in the book, you follow CEO Sam Solomon. He's an African-American leading a nearly all-white, the town's biggest private employer, nearly an all-white town, of course. What exactly was his story and what was he telling you?
Sam is a very smart guy, and he's a very good executive, very funny. And I met with him in late 2014. I told him what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And much to my surprise, he said, okay. And he gave me good access to himself and to the other executives and to the company. He was trying to engineer a turnaround. He wanted to save the company. Mm-hmm. And I follow his efforts to do that over the course of about a year.
Okay. And how was that? Well, how was that effort going for him as he was approaching it?
Well, he felt that he had made a lot of progress, and readers of Glass House will find out how it turned out. Mm. But he thought he was making a lot of progress. The company did wind up in bankruptcy under his watch, but that could have been a healthy thing because they were able to scrape off a lot of that debt they had been carrying around and emerge a little bit more healthy.
Mm-hmm. And you went back to the town with your mother, is that right?
In 2008, I visited the town with my mother, and that really was the seed that began me thinking about this. At the time, I didn't think about a book, but there were just some things I was seeing in the town that sort of disturbed me a little bit, and so I started following events in the town casually. Mm-hmm. And then about 2013, it was really like lightning. It just sort of struck me, and I said, oh my gosh, a lot of the stuff that I've been wanting to write about really is going right through the middle of a town I know well. It's my hometown.
So what do you think the prospects are for the future for Lancaster and similar cities and towns here in Michigan?
Well, I think there are a number of big challenges. However, I do think that Lancaster can make a comeback, partly because people in Lancaster still love their town. They are really civically engaged. They really want things to work out well. You know, Lancaster also has one advantage in that it's relatively close to Columbus. It's about 35 miles southeast of Columbus. Mm-hmm. And they are getting people who can have cheaper housing, who are moving into housing on the edge of town and commuting up to Columbus. And that could be a good thing. Also, Lancaster is still a handsome town. It's got some beautiful old pre-Civil War buildings and so on. Mm-hmm. And so it's still an attractive place. I think if they can attract some businesses to come into town, there may be a future for Lancaster, but it's really going through a rough patch right now.
Less than a minute here. I'm guessing what most would be Donald Trump supporters in that town?
It's about the last election was about 60% for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I think that people were, well, first of all, they voted Republican since Abraham Lincoln, so that's not really such a surprise. But I think some of the enthusiasm was really because Trump seemed like a guy who was going to burn it all down. He was going to, you know, put the flamethrower on both the Republicans and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of people in Fairfield County, in Lancaster, who were willing to grasp at that straw he was offering, and they were willing to say, okay, go ahead, burn it all down.
It's Brian Alexander, his brand-new book, Glass House, The 1% Economy and the Shattering of the All-American Town, story of him returning to Lancaster, Ohio, what he saw and what happened there. The book again, Glass House, Brian Alexander here on WILS. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Yep, and that wraps up for us. We're back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Good night.